you got to look at like Mike Trout being on the Angels, potentially the greatest player of all time, and he's probably not going to win anything. Otani's got that leeway. He's going to be a free agent.
Where do you think Otani ends up?
I think it's going to be like a really like under the radar team. He's definitely going to be in a big market.
I know he wanted to play on a coast. That was his whole thing when he came here originally. There's been some, you know, chatter about what's Haim planning? Is he sitting back this offseason so he can just throw an absolute heater package together to get Otani? And especially getting Yoshida as well.
Yes, yeah.
Kind of pairing them together.
A little duo, again. Yeah. What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to The Dugout. We're here with episode 16. As you can tell, AJ's not with us today, but you have me and Ben. We're here to talk baseball with you guys, and yeah, we're got a few things to talk about. One off-season move, it's been pretty quiet. We have another top five teams for you guys as well. But yeah, I mean, before we get into the baseball stuff, Ben, I'm not really much of a football guy, but Bills-Bengals, what do you feel about
that?
What
a game. Yeah. Wow. Absolutely. I mean, I don't want to say upset, but definitely not expected at all.
Yeah. Joe Burrow's that guy. Hopefully he finishes the deal, but yeah.
No.
You're not a fan? What is your football team?
I'm a Herbert guy, so I got to stick to my guns.
You are a Chargers fan.
Yeah. Can't have that.
I really don't watch too much anymore. I used to be a big Brett Favre guy, but haven't paid much attention since. Alrighty. So, we're going to be doing the top five Blue Jays of all time, our opinion today. I will start here with the number five spot, but I'm surprised we haven't done this one. We're almost done with all the teams, but I'm surprised this one got pushed so far back. So, yeah. Getting right into it, the number five spot, we have Jose Bautista. We all know this guy. We know what he can do, what he did, the big bat flip against the Rangers in the postseason there. But at the time when he did get traded to the Blue Jays, I don't think anyone expected him to develop into the star that he was at all. Yeah, six-time All-Star. He hit 54 home runs in 2010. Huge part of contributing to the team, especially back into their back-to-back ALCS appearances. But, yeah, the dude was – he had fire behind him. I mean, we all know that. When he got beamed the next year by the Rangers, that was hilarious. Mm-hmm. Rougned Odor, the big punch. But, yeah, I mean, just looking at his Blue Jays stats alone in those 10 years, 4,364 at-bats, 790 runs, 288 home runs, 766 RBIs, 56 stolen bases, and a batting average of .253. So I think number five is like the best spot to put this man. And we were going back and forth in our group chat what we wanted to put the order. But yeah, number five, Jose Bautista.
Just what a peak he had, huh? Like he had a great like 4 or 5 year run. Like he's not ever going to be a Hall of Famer or even mentioned, and probably won't even be on a ballot, but in terms of just like dominant peaks, like even Donaldson too, a guy we didn't even talk about for that. But just in terms of like short dominant peaks, like that, those Blue Jays teams were so like the order of Bautista, Donaldson, and Encarnacion, it was such a fun team. And then even Jose Reyes too, like those teams were so much fun to watch. Moving on to number four, we got Dave Steeb. Again, it's a very like not very well-known name. Accolade-wise, didn't have too much. He's a 7-time All-Star. He has an ERA title. 56 career WAR, which is right around the Hall of Fame threshold. I'm assuming at this point I don't know if he ever was on a ballot, or if he was, he's not on it anymore. But 3.44 career ERA, 176 wins. Just a very not well-known guy, and he had a long career as a Blue Jay in terms of that franchise, just a staple of that franchise. I'm sure plenty of Blue Jays fans know all about him and how much he meant to them, but it's just a not well-known guy.
Yeah, I'm going to be comparing him a lot to our number one pick here for sure, but yeah, I mean, like you said, not a well-known guy at all. I'm going to be honest, I didn't know him until we looked at this top five list, but yeah. Moving on, number three, we had Roberto Alomar. you go online, look at all the top five, like Blue Jays lists and all time greatest players for the team. He's like listed one, but I'm glad Ben brought this. Yeah, I'm glad Ben brought this up because I actually changed my mind here. Yeah, he was only with the Blue Jays from 91 till 95. And I mean, with the time in the team, I mean, two World Series championships, and both were with the Blue Jays, which kind of gets him on this list, I'd say. He was with a good amount of other teams. But yeah, they were back-to-back World Series championships, played with eight other teams. And yeah, even after the Blue Jays, he signed with the Orioles and led them to two ALCS appearances and won the 98 All-Star Game MVP award. So, I mean, yeah, he was a really solid player, but just not with the Blue Jays for too long. So I think that's why he falls there at number three for sure.
Yeah, I mean, to his credit, though, the 4 or 5 years that he was with the Blue Jays were peak of his career. I think everyone associates him with the Blue Jays. And just the numbers he put up in those the short years he was there was ridiculous. Moving on to number two, we got Carlos Delgado, which I feel like a lot of people don't associate Delgado too much with the Blue Jays. I do, at least. He spent a bulk of his career with them. 44 career WAR, 473 career homers, 280 batting average, 2,000 hits. Just one of the most pure power hitters of his time. Two-time All-Star, he had three Silver Sluggers, and he won a Major League Player of the Year. Not an MVP, but a Player of the Year. Had 145 RBIs in 2003, which is incredible. 1,500 total RBIs. Yeah, I mean, just not much to say about Delgado. Again, I think, I feel like a common theme with a lot of these top fives is, like, Delgado feels left off of a lot of conversations, and I feel like he definitely deserves to be in them. He's just short of 500, which definitely sucks, but just one of the better power hitters of his time.
Yeah, I mean, I think he should easily be on this list. He was definitely most prominent with the Blue Jays. He was with them the longest, obviously. And he holds the world record for home runs by a Puerto Rican player with 473 MLB record. Mm-hmm. That's kind of cool. He's one of six players in MLB history to hit 30 home runs in 10 consecutive seasons. It's a big one. And
incredible.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just try and read these. This is insane. During his time with the Blue Jays, he set so many team records. Home runs, RBIs, walks, slugging percentage, runs, total bases, doubles, runs created, extra base hits, times on base, hit by pitch, intentional walks, and at-bats per home run. So, I mean, this guy's just easily on this list for me. Easily.
And incredible.
Yeah, I did a video on him. I do, like, greatest bat flips of all time for our short-form content.
He's got some good ones.
It was, I don't know where it was, but it was he hit four home runs in one game, so it was one of those home runs. So, yeah, the dude was a beast, so easily on this list for me for sure. Yeah, moving on to number one, Roy Halladay, Doc. Time, personally, this might be a hot take, but I'll always think of him in a Phillies jersey. I don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was the year he was traded. He was just so dominant. But, yeah, I mean, I said myself, but I'd put Roy it's tough. With Dave Steeb, I mean, I compared them a little bit. Steeb has 175 career wins as a Blue Jay. Roy has 148. So, I mean, right behind him. That's where it was getting tricky for me. Basically identical ERAs. Steve had 3.43. Roy had 3.44. I'd say what makes Roy better here in this situation. Steve never struck out 200 batters in one season. Roy's done that three times, I think. So I mean kind of leaves it right there for me. Yeah. But yeah, Roy had he had his Cy Young as well in 2003.
Yeah.
He was fully capable of striking out 200 in a season, like I just said. Yeah, I mean, just what a beast. I mean, I feel like not a lot of people talk about his Blue Jays career.
No, it's always Phillies.
Yeah, always. That's why, I mean, but yeah, he was really, really dominant with the Jays.
There's just not much to say. One of the best pitchers of our generations, for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, just definitely as a Jay, like, definitely don't really, you know, remember him in a Blue Jays uniform. And, I mean, it's probably due to the Phillies postseason prominence when he was there, and then obviously as well as the no-hitter in the playoffs too.
Yep.
And then just recency bias as well. I think, you know, a lot of us remember watching baseball in 2009 more than watching it in, you know, the early 2000s. So definitely not remembered as a Blue Jay. But, I mean, the bulk of his career is in Toronto. And, you know, he's got a Cy Young both in Toronto and in Philadelphia. But just what a dominant pitcher. And it's just so sad the way he left us as well. But
for sure. 100%.
Just an incredible player.
That, I feel like, rests in peace for sure, but a lot of people might not even know that. So, there you go. Top five Blue Jays, there you guys have it. Leave your comments below if you agree with us, what you would change up. But, yeah, we're actually going to be doing a newer segment, not really new. It's similar to our Hall of Fame or not. But before we get into that, we never really let Ben introduce himself to the podcast, which is pretty... I don't know, but I definitely want to talk about, you talked about you played baseball in college. So just how'd you get into all of this, basically, you know, the video, I know you're a video editor as well. Now you're here on the podcast with Clutch Point. So yeah, just whatever you want to talk about, go ahead.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I've been video editing since I was 14, just kind of as a hobby for fun. I did a lot of work with the Oregon football team for a while.
Really?
Not affiliated with the team, but you know, the players would hit me up and, you know, we'd make whatever tapes and whatnot. And then got to school, that kind of slowed down. I was obviously playing baseball in college. I played at UMass for a couple of years. I mean, it was a good experience. It's definitely something that, like, I'm glad I did and, like, went through, and it was definitely cool, like, going through the recruiting process. And I mean, I've played baseball my entire life. It was my whole life. But it's just different, man. Like, once you get there, it's a whole different thing. Like, because, you know, growing up, like, you're always the best kid, and, you know, you're told how good you are, and you get to college and it slaps you in the face that, yeah, like, you're not very good. And you got to learn that pretty quick. But no, I mean, it was such a cool experience. The places I got to go, you know, just the competition got to face as well. And then we had two draft picks during my time there. But no, I mean, it's a super cool experience. Super glad I did it. And then in terms of this, you know, some of you guys may know the company Lumberland. I was there for a while, interned there, then transitioned to full time before it ultimately shut down. And then, you know, good friends with another guy at Clutch Points, Dante, that you guys may know, transitioned to this role. And now I get to talk about sports for a living. So yeah, it's a cool gig, but.
Awesome.
It's great.
The Lumberland stuff, when I first came to Clutch Points, it was funny because I watched, like, all the Lumberland videos. Like, I saw you guys, I saw Dante all the time, and now just, like, Dante popped up in, like, my first meeting with Clutch Points. It was hilarious.
Yeah.
Like, I watched you guys. It was funny, but
I know.
You
it's super weird.
Yeah. You said you were a catcher, right? When you were playing in college.
I was, yeah. So yeah.
You remember, like, any games, like, anything specific, like, from the team, like, any moments or, like, on the field or off the field that really sticks out to you that you remember?
I think the biggest one is we played Georgia right before COVID, and that was – at the time, they were the number four team in the country.
Yeah.
and we weren't very good at all. And it was the weekend before SEC play for them. So, like, that was – they were ramping up. And they were, you know, they were getting ready to go for SEC play. And they had – I don't know if you've heard the name Emerson – like, there's another Mariner that we might see in a couple of years, Emerson Hancock. He was a sixth overall pick. And just watching, like, that guy pitch, like, ground level, like, in the dugout, it's just, oh my, like, you don't realize the talent that's out there, and it's just so different. Like, you're around all these, like, D1 athletes, and, you know, you play so many other teams in your conference and across the country, but, like, when you watch the number six pick overall, like, in person, it's not, it's a whole different class of player. It's just, you question, like, how a human can do things like that. It was incredible. So I think that was definitely probably the coolest thing. And then just, like, the depth they have, like, you know, it was 16-1 on Saturday. They put me in the game and I'm going up and facing, like, their, like, freshman reliever who, like, probably wouldn't, you know, he'd be an ace anywhere else in the country. And he's, right. you know, the last out of the pen for Georgia. And it's just like the kid's like 6'4", and he throws from up here, like throws me a fastball. And I'm just like, yeah, I can't touch that. And then, you know, it's like a full count. And D1, like, you'll see guys that can throw off speed full count like pretty well, but like it's not, I mean, it kind of depends on the level. But this kid snaps a curveball from, like, first of all, it's up here, so it's like coming out like he's like that's 7 feet high.
Yeah.
And it just looks like another fastball. Ball goes straight into the dirt. I swing. I look like an idiot. It just oh my goodness. It was yeah. I mean, just being able to like see the talent across the country and be able to watch and like witness good baseball in front of your eyes, I think that was definitely the coolest part.
Yeah, that's definitely awesome, because I'll always just like talk with my friends, like, imagine you're in the batter's box, like, against like any MLB pitcher, like, I'm not gonna be able to swing at any of that. And you're just you're in the dugout in college and you're just surrounded by, you know, potentially former MLB players. So I mean, yeah, that's awesome.
There's different breeds out there. It's wild. Yeah.
Alrighty, well, yeah. If you guys did not know, Ben played baseball, so there you go. Awesome to hear. A little background about him. Moving on, we will talk about our newer segment. So, like I said, we usually do Hall of Fame or not, but this week with AJ not being here, usually hands us the names for that. So we decided to go ahead and do players that should be in the Hall of Fame, that we think should be in the Hall of Fame. And we picked two names each. And yeah, we'll just go right into this. I wrote a lot down for my two names. So Ben, if you want to go first, go ahead.
All right. Well, we'll open it up with, you know, Oral Hershiser. I was doing some research before this, and I was honestly a little surprised that he wasn't in the Hall of Fame. Obviously off the ballot by now. So going through the accolades, he's got a Cy Young, 3-time All-Star. He won a World Series with the Dodgers in 1988. Gold Glove. He won a World Series MVP as well as the NLCS MVP. He has an ALCS MVP. Also has a Silver Slugger as a pitcher, which is pretty cool. But I mean, 56 career WAR. He kind of, you know, it's not crazy, but it hits the threshold. 204 wins, 150 losses, 3.48 ERA. There's just so many seasons, though, that he led the league in different categories. I mean, he led the league in innings pitched 3 years straight from 87 to 89. And then in 88, he had 15 complete games with 8 shutouts, had the best win percentage 1 year. It's very odd to me that he is not, for how we talk about Oral Hershiser and for how well he's known and recognized as one of the better pitchers in the game, it's just very shocking to me that he's not a Hall of Famer. And I semi understand why, because of, you know, the numbers maybe aren't there. You know, he's got 2,000 strikeouts, 3,100 innings pitched, a 1.2 career WHIP. It's still a little weird to me. I don't know. I would love to be in that time when he was considered for the Hall of Fame and kind of see and try and realize why he wasn't. But definitely a guy I think that should be in there, because there's definitely pitchers in the Hall of Fame that don't have the career he has. So I'm rolling with Hershiser as my first one.
Yeah, really, really shocking. I mean, just doing the research for this segment, and you're just looking at all these players that you really thought were in the Hall of Fame, but they're just not. It just blows my mind. So, yeah, very shocking. Well, me being the biased Yankees fan, the first name that came to my head was Thurman Munson. Rest in peace, of course. Just went out tragically, plane crash. But yeah, the biggest obstacle for him, I feel like, was one sec, let me scroll down here. Like the era that he played in of catchers. So I mean, that's like late 60s through like early 80s. There's just some really great catchers. Munson's peak WAR is 8th best among catchers all time, and 3 of the 7 players in front of him, Johnny Bench, Gary Carter, and Carlton Fisk. So some big names right there. And his peak WAR is tops among any catcher who has been eligible for the Hall of Fame. but has not been inducted and exceeds that of 10 catchers that are already in. So the numbers were sort of there, even though his career was so short. And yeah, so Munson, he might have been like not fully Cooperstown a lot. I can understand a lot of people saying that just because of the short career, but I feel like he was similar to like how Mike, two different positions, but I feel like it was similar to how Mike Mussina's career was overshadowed sort of by Pedro Martinez. Like I said, just all the catchers that were playing. And he was also great in the postseason as well. His postseason slash line of 357, 378, and a 496. Regular season slash line, 292, 346, and 410. And if you really want to get extreme, I actually compared him a little bit to Buster Posey, who I think is going to easily be in the Hall of Fame. Posey, 1,371 career games. Munson, 1,423. Had more career games. 158 career home runs for Posey. Munson, 113. Posey, 1,500 career hits. Munson, 1,558. So, I mean, neck and neck right there. Won one MVP award. Both won Rookie of the Year. Munson has two more gold gloves than Posey. And Posey has one more World Series ring than Munson. So, comparing him to a guy like Posey, I mean, we'll see him in the Hall of Fame most likely. So, why not Munson?
Yeah, that's what I got. I agree. All right, so I'm rolling with another pitcher, and we're going Johan Santana. I mean, just one of the most dominant pitchers of his time. He led the league three times in the ERA, twice in innings pitched, twice in games started, three times in strikeouts. He led in so much, four times in WHIP. It's incredible. The season, and the thing is too, he never really had a bad season. Like even his last year. You know, it wasn't great, but a 4.85 ERA is, you know, that's average nowadays. And I think it had to do with injuries and, you know, just having a shortened career will definitely hinder him. But, you know, in that, like, in the small, I don't even want to call it a small peak, but, you know, in the peak of, I would say, 2002 to 2010, he had two Cy Youngs. I mean, he finished top 10 four other times, which is incredible. Four-time All-Star, as I said, three-time ERA title. He had a triple crown as well. He has a 51 career WAR, which again is just under the threshold. Just missed a 2,000 strikeouts. I mean, he just had such a great body of work as a career. He was so consistent every single year. I mean, he just never, like, besides his 2000 rookie season, like, he really didn't have a bad year, or, like, ever. And it's shocking to me. But yeah, I mean, I understand why he won't be a Hall of Famer and is left off of out of that conversation. But it's just a shame to see because during his time, he was the guy, like, just such a great, great, great pitcher. And so iconic too. I mean, I think everyone who watched baseball around that time knows Johan Santana and can watch him pitch in their minds. It's such a great player.
Yeah, I feel like the consistency, I mean, that's like it gets overlooked at for a lot of players. Like, unless you're on an all-star level, Aaron Judge, just any big names, I feel like you're really not talked about, even if you're consistent and never have a bad year. So, yeah, definitely something to look at. The second person that I thought of, Kenny Lofton. On his career, he played 2,103 games with a career OPS plus of 107. Looking at his OPS plus, it was definitely lower than most Hall of Famers, but he never really hit for power. So, his average and on-base percentage, I think that's got to be looked at the most. He was a leadoff hitter, so he was being on base was like a huge factor. He stole 622 bases in his career, and he was caught only 160 times. So, I mean, he was successful like 80% of the time stealing. From his first full season in 92 to 96, he led the AL in stolen bases each season. And then he led the majors in 93, 94, and 96. Even in his final season in 2007, he stole 23 bases, and he was like 40 years old. Defensively, he won four gold gloves. For the most part of his career, DRS wasn't even a stat yet. So We could talk about the total zone, I guess, since DRS wasn't there. It's not too accurate, but does the job. He had 115 TZ, and if you compare that to Hall of Famer Larry Walker, who won 7 Gold Gloves, he had 99 TZ. So there you go for that. And overall, he was a 6-time All-Star, R WAR of 68.4. And that WAR puts him at 9th best center fielder, and he's in the middle of Hall of Famers like Trout, Beltran, Dawson, Snyder. So, yeah, I think just another guy that's not really talked about that much anymore.
Yeah, I think he just played in an era where that skill set wasn't very appreciated. Yeah. I mean, especially like if you think about like 07, that Indians team, and you think about them playing the Red Sox, you had guys like Manny, Big Poppy, you know, players like that. It's just it's such an undervalued asset, especially coming out of the steroid era and then coming, you know, more to present day baseball, just kind of that gap in between, like in terms of, you know, what players were, it's definitely forgot about because he kind of hit the overlap. He kind of went from the steroid era into the current day era. So definitely not appreciated as much as he should be.
For sure. Yeah, that steroid era just took over. So, well, there you guys have it. Those were the two names we came up with. We didn't say Barry Bonds. That was something we talked about. We talk about a bit about him on the spot a lot. So, I'm sure AJ's happy about that one because he's not a fan of Barry Bonds. All right. So to finish this up, we are going to talk about the recent offseason move. Ben, you want to cue us up? Tell us what happened.
Yeah. So the Marlins traded they traded Pablo Lopez for Luis Arraez.
There were some other names, but I don't even.
There were some prospects in there too. I don't think they were too big of a prospect. You know, in terms of you know in the farm. But face value, it feels like a very good trade for both teams. I think what that means is the Twins are very confident with Miranda going forward as another bat in the infield, and they're okay with losing Arraez. And maybe the fact that they don't think Arraez is gonna sustain potentially. Again, like Arraez is very underappreciated because he's not a power guy. It's strictly contact, and then especially in this era now of you know batting average doesn't matter. It just hit home runs.
Yeah,
he feels very undervalued. For the Marlins though, I don't know. It doesn't make that team any more competitive. I think they're very happy with Alcantara. Obviously, and I guess they're going to roll with, you know, Rodgers and see if Rodgers bounces back. And then I think Braxton Garrett's going to probably end up, you know, in the rotation this year, as well as Edward Cabrera. So I think they're confident enough in their pitching prospects and, you know, just young pitchers in general to make that move. And maybe they also felt that Lopez was, you know, that was a career year for him as well. Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's a fairly even trade. I think for Minnesota, it brings you an ace because they didn't really have an ace. And then, you know, it just, I don't know. It's a confusing trade to me because now you have Jazz in center field. Who was kind of your franchise player. Yeah. He hasn't played center field. He's your franchise player. And not only did they move him, like he willingly moved himself, which I guess is fine. I mean, it's cool. It's just a little odd. The Marlins are very committed to win now, and I don't see that trade really helping them win now, especially in that division with the Mets and the Phillies. So I don't know. It's a good trade, but at the same time it's a bit of a head scratcher.
Yeah, that was obviously the biggest thing that sticks out is moving Jazz over there to center field. And then I saw, I don't know if this is like their projected lineup, but Joey Wendell at shortstop. That makes no sense to me. I feel like that shouldn't happen. He's not even an average third baseman, in my opinion. So just throwing him at shortstop.
He's already 30-something, too. I think he's like 33 now.
But the Arise part, that pickup for the Marlins, if he continues to contribute like he did with the Twins, he's only 25 years old, and he's under control until 2025, I think. So that's pretty solid. I don't know how old Pablo Lopez is. He's probably like early 30s, maybe.
I want to look it up quick.
Oh, I spelled that wrong.
He's 26. He's 26.
Oh, really? He's a lot younger than I thought. But, yeah, like you said, I mean, really even trade. The Twins definitely need pitching. Like last podcast, I said, why not just throw the minimum at Trevor Bauer? Do they still have Sonny Gray, the Twins? He might be a free agent.
I want to say...
Or I think he's a free agent next year. But
hey, he's still on the Twins as of right now.
I always liked Sonny Gray. Obviously, he was a Yankee, but...
He had a pretty solid year last year.
Yeah.
3.08 ERA, 24 games started, 8-5. That's not too bad. But,
And the Marlins were... I mean, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think I like the Twins' bullpen. I think if they figured out the rotation... Yeah. I think they'd be in a better spot. They do have, I don't want to butcher his name. Jordan Blaskovich is coming up.
Is he a prospect?
And they like him a bunch. And then they also have, he pitched this year for them for a couple games. Joe Ryan.
Did he recently come up?
Yeah, he came up for a couple games. More than a couple, I think. And he actually pitched pretty well, if I remember.
Nice.
I mean, he went 13-8 last year at the 3.5 ERA, so pretty solid for them. And he's a younger guy. Well, he's 26 as well, but prospect wise, he's younger. I mean, just looking through the Twins. All right, so Blazevic is their 16th prospect, but.
Really?
Looking through their prospect list, there's not many pitchers. It's very shortstop heavy. They got Brooks Lee and Royce Lewis, obviously. And then you kind of hit a bunch of the pitchers, and they're all set to debut this year. So I feel like they have a lot of faith in what's coming up pitching-wise. And I think Pablo Lopez was the start of having a solid block to build it all around. And then obviously they have Duran in the bullpen, who was incredible this past year. So I don't know. The Twins could be a decent team to watch if things pan out for them.
Yeah, 100%. Royce Lewis, did you just have the prospect list for the Twins? Is he like ranked second? He's not their top.
He's second. He was up this year, and then he tore his ACL. He was doing decent as well.
Who's their top?
Brooks Lee.
Yep. I don't know, man. The Twins, I feel like they should make like another move or something. Because they definitely want to contend.
I think they're banking on, because now you have Miranda at third, Correa at short, and I think they're banking on Lewis being back at some point this coming year. Because he tore his ACL very early in the season. But to start the season, because he only played 12 games, but he was hitting 300. With two homers, 550 slug, 867 OPS, which like as a rookie like is very promising, and all of his minors numbers are very good as well. So I think trading Arise was just showing confidence that Lewis is going to be back at some point and that he's going to be there for the future. Which I mean, he was I believe a number one overall pick. Yeah, he was in 2017. I guess I don't hate the Twins lineup as much as I thought I did. Because you got Miranda, who was very good as a rookie this year. You get Correa back. You can plug Royce Lewis in. Even if you don't plug Royce Lewis in at the beginning of the season, you have Nick Gordon to play second base, who, again, like another like younger guy. He was a top pick. I think he's fifth overall pick in like 2015 or something. Who had a decent year. I mean, it wasn't anything special, but it was a good year. And then who do they have at first? Well, Miranda played some first too.
Ariza
played a bunch of first as well. And they still have Sano, do they not?
Miguel Sano. I have no clue. I'd assume. I don't know what other team he'd be on.
Oh my God, they have Jorge Polanco too. Completely forgot about that.
Yeah,
I might not hate this team as much as I thought I did. Did they re-sign Gary, or is he still a free agent?
Nope, he's a free agent. A bunch of Yankees still fans want him back for some reason. Not really sure why.
And then again, like Kirilloff was a great player for them. If he bounces back, that's another great bat. Larnick's showing.
Yeah, Max Kepler too. If he's not traded, too. I mean, this is a solid team.
they really don't. Have yeah, they still have Sano as well? This team isn't as bad as I thought it was.
From
admittedly,
kind of off topic. From like a twin standpoint, Buxton's like always injured. He's obviously like the face of the franchise for right now, obviously. But do you see Correa, you know, kind of taking that over, making it his team? Because we only saw Correa with the Twins for 1 year. I really think he's gonna like step in and be this leader and kind of.
Yeah, because I think I feel like it's different this time around. Because last year when he signed, it was very much here for a year, and it's a stepping stone to get paid. And now that he's here long term, he'll probably have a bigger role as you know as a face. But I think Buxton still stays the face because he's the homegrown kid. I mean he was a first overall pick for them in 2014, 2013. So he's definitely, I think, would definitely stay as the face. I really hope Byron Buxton can put a full season together because his numbers would be silly. That's just absolutely silly if he can put his whole season together because that guy has all the talent in the world. Like when you talk about like five-tool players, like Byron Buxton's a five-tool player. So if he can stay healthy for a whole season, not even a whole season, if he can stay healthy if he can play 140 games, I mean, his numbers last year were insane. He played so he had 340 at bats last year and hit 28 home runs.
28 home runs?
28. That's silly.
And he was silly. Out for like
in 2021 he played 61, hit 19.
Okay. So yeah, he's always really
played 39, hit 13. Like you're averaging a home run every three games.
Well, he was just an all-star too last year, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. His first half was incredible.
When he's out there, he's consistent. And his deal that he signed in I think it might have been 2021. I think it's 7 years like $100 million. So that's not that was an extension. So that's not bad at all, in my opinion.
No.
If he stays healthy, that's a huge W.
Yeah, he signed through 2028, $700 million.
Especially looking at like Correa's deal. Correa signed for what's Correa's 6 years, 200? And I mean he has a history of injuries as well. So this really makes Buxton's deal look really, really good.
I really want to see a full year of Byron Buxton because we haven't even gotten to the closest we got to a full year of Byron Buxton was 2017, and in 2017 he wasn't nearly the player he was now.
Right.
He played 140 games at .253, had 16 home runs, 29 stolen bases.
Jesus.
Oh my goodness.
That was rookie year that you're talking about, right?
27? No. This was third year. And then since then he's played 28 games, 87 games, 39 games, 61, and then 92. Like he's played over 100 games once in his career. We'll exclude 2020 because it's shortened season obviously. But that's just like when you talk about like DeGrom being hurt and like the talent he has. Like Buxton's very much up the same alley. Like one of the most talented players in the league, and especially at his position, if he could stay healthy nearly, double the time that he's hurt. Like, we could have been looking at a Hall of Fame career, quite honestly. Easily. But I mean, that's most likely out the window at this point.
Because he's got to be.
He's getting old. He's getting old. I mean, he's now 29.
That's what I thought, yeah. Yeah. Well, Correa's right around there, I'd say. He's like 20-something, late 20s.
But, I mean, that's the thing with Buxton. Like, even when you're, like, 33, like, let's say you lose a step, like, you still slide into a DH role and you can still do damage. And then you take the pressure off getting hurt as well on the field. Man, what a wasted talent he could end up being.
Well, yeah, I mean, I see it going two ways. I see the Twins eventually calling, you know, Royce Lewis comes back, and then, you know, these other prospects start coming up. They got a solid team, and, you know, maybe they contend. Or the other way it's going to go is Correa and Buxton are going to be injured all the time, and they're going to be like that duo.
Yeah.
And, I don't know. Waste of talent.
I mean, I think most likely scenario what we see this year is they're a wild card team. I don't even know if they could be a wild card team, though, because of the AL East. That's tough. The issue. Yeah. And then even the AL West now. I would say it's 50-50 with them and the Guardians. But I still like the Guardians way more.
Guardians are young.
The Guardians, and they still have farm players to come up. Like, yeah, so it's tough. I don't see the Twins winning the division. It's definitely going to be the Guardians. I think the Twins can manage to get themselves within a wild card spot. I don't know if they can finish it with like a team like the Rangers or the team like a Mariners, or even the Orioles or the Rays. Definitely not the Red Sox this year. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's division win or bust for them because they most likely won't make it into the playoffs otherwise. And even if they did, it's probably just another first round exit to the Yankees, as we've seen like twice in the past 5 years.
Definitely
the Twins just always feel like a team that are so close and they just can't do it. Like it's just like it's like the Rays. They get so close every single year. You feel decent about the Twins, especially because they're in the weakest division in baseball, would we say?
Yeah.
So you feel like even with the roster they have, like it doesn't have to be as special as it needs to be. They just have to get hot at the right time and play well in the playoffs, kind of like the Guardians did this year. It's just they're always – I don't want to say it's a disappointment for them because they're not hyped up. Like it's not it's not like people are disappointed when the Twins lose, but they're always a team that's on the cusp. And they just can never do it. I don't know what it is, but yeah, hopefully Correa shows up and kind of steps into a bigger role and, you know, has a Astros-esque year in him. And if Buxton can play 120 plus games, Lopez pitches well, I think they could be a solid team.
Talking about just waste of talent with Buxton, I mean, not really similar at all, but I mean, you got to look at like Mike Trout being on the Angels. Potentially the greatest player of all time, and he's probably not going to win anything. Otani's got that leeway. He's going to be a free agent. So, I mean, but.
Where do you think Otani ends up?
Dude, it's not going to – I don't think it's going to be – I think it's going to be, like, a really, like, under-the-radar team. Like, something random, like the Rays, something really random. Cubs, maybe? I think the Cubs have been targeting him, but what do you think?
I don't know about the Rays.
I was just something super random.
No, I know. I don't think he'd want to play in Tampa either. Like, I feel like he's going to want to.
He's definitely going to be in a big market.
I know he wanted to play on a coast. That was his whole thing when he came here originally. I mean, that's why the Sox were one of the teams. I'm not going to give my hopes up, but like there's been some, you know, chatter about what's Haim planning? Is he sitting back this offseason so he can just throw an absolute heater package together to get Otani? It could happen. Wait,
say that again. I think you cut out for a second.
I was going to say there's been some chatter about Haim, like if he's been quiet this offseason and sitting back to throw together a big package for Otani. And then especially getting Yoshida as well.
Yes.
Kind of pairing them together.
A little duo, again.
It could be
It could be a thing. It could definitely be. That could be like a big splash for the Red Sox. And that would, in my eyes, that would wipe out all of the wrongdoing Haim has done in the past.
And what he's been, what he's been talking about, saying what it was, the Devers press conference we were just talking about, what he said.
Exactly.
So, I mean,
exactly. Yeah. If he pulled that off and traded for him and then signed him to a long-term deal, or not even long-term, but, you know, a reasonable deal. In my eyes, I can't speak for all Red Sox fans, that would wipe everything out. Because not only is that another year closer to your prospects of, you know, Meyer, York, and then another year of Casas development, Mata might be at, you know, up at that point as well. And then, you know, same thing with Bayo. That would be a scary team. The 2024 Red Sox would be a scary team.
What's Marcelo Mayer's ETA? Is there like a time they think he's going to be?
I believe 2024, which honestly feels a little soon.
Yeah,
actually. I mean, he's only 18, but he has been insane. Career in the minors so far, 280. 17 stolen bases, 13 homers, 53 RBIs, OPS of 888, 339 OBP. He's growing into his power more and more now. And he's a top 100 prospect in baseball.
He's in Double-A?
I believe he just got to Double-A, yeah. No, he's in High-A as well. So he's got a 2024 ETA right now.
I think Volpe's talked about just so much more because of how fast he moved through Double-A to Triple-A, and it was just like
See, I think Meyer's going to do that this year. I think that's going to be what Meyer does this year.
Yeah.
And then now, it seems like now, minor league prospect-wise, like, Triple-A isn't the spot anymore to get called up. It's all Double-A. All the good prospects are in Double-A, and all the good prospects get called up from Double-A. Like, Triple-A now very much seems like the cusp players that can't, like a Frankie Cordero, that's where those type of players stay. Like,
right.
Not really good enough for the MLB. Sometimes we need depth. Sometimes he'll come up. Basically, just like the 27th man roster is what AAA feels like now, whereas AA is like the place to be prospect wise. So I think Meyer jumps to AA. Some Sox fans are like, yeah, call him up this year. Like, that would be stupid. I mean, that's what he did with Dahlbeck, and that ruined him. And I think, like,
was Dahlbeck, like, even was he like the top prospect?
He was a top prospect for us, yeah. And then obviously, like, that guy sucks, he can't hit a baseball. And obviously no one will take him anymore either. So
yeah,
because he has zero value. Yeah. I mean, Meyer, I'm super excited about Meyer. I mean, he's just,
all I'm saying is Anthony Volpe better be like the next upcoming of Jesus Christ himself, the way that everyone talks about him. So
I don't know.
He does that. He has top baseball IQ out of all prospects or something. That's kind of promising.
It is. I think, I don't know. Like, I don't want to speak on this because it's going to come off as biased.
Yeah.
But, like, what the Sox got in Meyer was an absolute bargain, because Meyer was supposed to go first. Like, he was widely regarded as the first overall pick. And then Haim got him at 4, which is incredible. I cannot wait for him. He's just such a tantalizing prospect. And he's going to be the shortstop for the next 10 years for the Red Sox. Like it sucks now as a fan because the team is so bad and, you know, you don't have a shortstop and it's just seems hopeless. But, like,
you know,
one thing Haim has done is build a farm.
Yeah. Marcelo definitely gives me, I don't know if, just speaking randomly, but he looks lengthy in, like, most of his pictures, like a lengthy shortstop.
Yeah.
Gives me, like, Correa vibes for sure.
Yeah.
Correa's, like, that lengthy, can dive. And so, yeah. I think with Volpe, everyone's just talking about him because, you know, it's like the Yankee story. He grew up a Yankee fan, wants to be shortstop for the Yankees, just like Derek Jeter. So, I mean, I think that's just more looked at than his actual playing time, really. Everyone's just so hyped for that.
Year?
He hit 249 last year. He was
pretty solid.
I mean, he had 21 bombs, but 249.
But I think that is that over double A and triple A? Did they like
yeah,
combine them?
Yeah, it was over both. Yeah, it was over both. 251 double A, 236 and triple A.
He steals bases like crazy too.
Yeah, he does. He had 44 in double A. I mean, it's 50 total bags this past year combined, which is kind of crazy.
I don't know.
He should be a good player, but once again, like Yankees prospects, it's hard to say. Yeah.
At this point, it's like Yankees fans are going to be upset even if he's like a consistent player, because you missed, like, could have went and got Correa. Like, everyone's complaining about some. Anyone can.
I feel like the thing with Yankees fans is, like, every prospect is going to end up being disappointing because of how widely talked about. Exactly. Like, Jason Dominguez is never going to be as good as people thought he was going to be.
Oh, probably not.
The guy was, like, 2 years ago, we're sitting here talking about Jason Dominguez being the next Mike Trout. And I was like, why? What has he done? He's played in rookie ball, which isn't – or in the developmental league, which isn't even rookie ball. Like, you're playing, like, other 18-year-olds that were picked in, like, the 27th round. Like, it's not – the competition isn't competition at that point. It's your own farm against guys so you can get used to baseball and get developed. Like, he's turned into a pretty good player now, but, like, when you – like, as soon as you draw a Mike Trout comparison, doesn't matter what you do because you're never going to be Mike Trout, and they're going to be upset with that because someone called you a Mike Trout, which, you know, isn't his fault, and, like, I feel bad for him because of it, because, you know, some writer called him Mike Trout, and, you know, now that's what – fans expect, and when they don't get that, they're going to be upset, which, you know, it sucks for the kid, but at the same time, it's like you can't jump the gun on these kids that early, and it sucks because it kills most of them. Right. Would you rather have Gunnar Henderson or Anthony Volpe?
Oh, dude, I don't know. I don't want to answer it too quick because we've seen Gunnar called up and just hit a home run, first plate appearance. And he is rated higher than Volpe right now. So
That is true.
I'll go ahead and say Gunnar.
Yeah, but I think that has more to do with ETA, though, as well. Because I think he's just closer. He's had more production. I don't know. I'm sticking with Gunnar. I'm taking lefty bats with how much righty dominance there is in the league now. Like, I'm taking lefty bats. That's why I'm so excited about Mayer. Because lefty bats are so, so important now. And there's been such an increase in, like, how good lefty bats are nowadays. Like, it's just, oh my God, that Gunnar Henderson is going to be a stud.
Yeah, I mean, with the short porch too. I mean, yeah, I'd pick Gunnar being a lefty, but... Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I'm excited for Volpe. Dominguez kind of probably would have made sense, like, try and get Reynolds for him. I know they wanted Dominguez, but I think they wanted Volpe.
See, that's the thing with, like, Dominguez. Like, that's a guy I would sell high on.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, sure, he could end up being a great player, but, like, at this point, like, is his value ever gonna get this high until, like, a couple years into the majors? Like, no, probably not. Because he's such a highly regarded prospect, and he has all the tools, and he's a switch hitter, and he's so young. Like, before he gets hurt, he had a great futures game this past year. Like, he's been on a national stage. Until his second or third year in the league, where, like, he's, you know, hit, like, 20 homers and, you know, hit .280 with 20 stolen bases, like, his value would never be this high.
Yeah.
As it is right now. So I would dump him.
Yeah, I mean, I collect a ton of baseball cards, so he was one of those prospects that I was gonna, like, really, really invest in, but I really didn't at all. I think there's a Dominguez card back there, you can't see it, but didn't buy too many of his cards because you never know. Volpe, I actually did just buy a nice Volpe card. It's on the way.
Oh man,
I'm ready. I'm ready for Volpe. He's got a. It's another thing. Everyone's comparing this man to, like, Derek Jeter. He's going to come up and be like, all right, now I got to play like Derek Jeter. I got to live up to that. It's got to be in their head.
Well, I wouldn't want my
no, you don't.
Next franchise star shortstop to be Derek Jeter, because that's not very good.
No, I mean, yeah. Everyone,
Derek Jeter's overrated. I love Derek Jeter. Like, Derek Jeter's like a Yankee I respect, and like I think everyone respects.
Yeah,
but he wasn't that good.
No, the numbers.
Like, if he was on any other team, if he was on any other team, no one would talk about that guy. Not a single person. Like, if he was on the Royals, not a single person would ever talk about that guy. He was an average defender. I mean, he was a good hitter. I mean, you know, he had 3,000 plus hits and whatnot. I mean, the power wasn't amazing. It was there. But one of the most overrated players of all time, just because he played in New York, which is sad, but I've never
it's
been
just,
as high.
It's his story is more looked at. Growing up,
like
Yankees
being
fan.
The captain of the Yankees is more important than anything he's ever actually done on the field. But like, dude, like the diving catch into the stands he made, like, not that cool of a play. He caught it like 10 feet in front of the stands and then dove into the stands after he caught it. Wasn't that cool? I've seen so many more impressive catches.
This feels so bad talking about like in this way, but like the flip play, I think that was always like a overrated kind of play there at home. Home plate.
It was like a cool like being aware play and whatnot, but like I don't know. That's definitely his best like the jump throw is not that cool either, I don't think. I've seen so many other people make jump throws like in games.
What's funny is like he's always like did everything right in his career, like Mr. Perfect, and then he's one vote off of being unanimous in the Hall of Fame. That's kind of funny.
I would so much rather watch A-Rod at shortstop than Jeter. But that's the thing, like Jeter couldn't play any other position except for shortstop. Like, and A-Rod could.
Jeter
like,
hated A-Rod, I'm pretty sure, when he came to the Yankees.
Yeah, they did. There was so much beef. Like,
yeah.
There's a I don't think it's a full documentary, but there is like a 20-minute video on it. It was pretty cool to watch. But it was just basically like just having like two alphas like that and two like massive figures at the same time and like trying to steal the spotlight from each other. And like they handled it pretty well. Like it was never really like it was public in a sense, but they never bashed each other. It was never like, oh yeah, these guys definitely hate each other. It was like, oh, I think A-Rod and Jeter hate each other.
I don't know. Jeter knew what A-Rod could do when he was coming over. So he probably got a little jealous, honestly, but
I mean, that's the thing. Like, Jeter refused to move for him.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure A-Rod probably at the time didn't love, because I think A-Rod probably knew. And I think Jeter also knew that A-Rod was a better shortstop than he was. I think part of the reason also why I don't like Derek Jeter as much is, like, I feel like we got robbed of, like, watching a really good shortstop play for a long time because Jeter hogged shortstop, which, like, fine. Like, A-Rod is still a great third baseman. But, like, such an amazing shortstop too, and we never really got to see it after a certain point. Same thing happened with Machado. Like they moved Machado's a shortstop, they moved him to third.
True. Yeah, I mean, I think the if Correa was going to the Mets, that was giving me a lot of like A-Rod Jeter vibes, to be honest.
Yeah.
With Lindor there shortstop, but
yeah, but I think that's tough because like they're both like platinum glove caliber players.
I don't think the beef like Jeter was. I think Lindor actually wanted him there, like he told Steve, like, go out there and get him.
Yeah. Is Francisco Lindor a Hall of Famer right now?
I hate Francisco Lindor, so I mean, I'm gonna say no. I'm just gonna be biased.
Why do you hate him,
dude? He's just he told
he hit a grand slam off you and then hit three homers off you.
We're not gonna talk about that. We're not gonna get into any of that. We're actually running out of time, actually.
I love Lindor. Lindor's the man.
No, but we got like really off topic. I wanted to circle back to the Marlins.
Yeah,
they're actually interested in signing Gurriel to play first base for them. Who was their Who was their first base before? Wasn't it
I think it was Aguiar.
Yeah, it was. So where's he at? Is he done?
He is now a free agent.
See, I don't.
Well, no, he was on the Orioles most recently, right?
No, I think he was on the Marlins. I'm pretty. Was he on?
He was, and then he played both on the Marlins and the Orioles this year.
I was gonna say because I had him on my fantasy team for some reason.
Yeah,
he was on the Marlins. But
yeah, what did he? What was that? He must have gotten traded, but like I don't know what trade he would have been
part of. The Jazz. I don't like Jazz being in center. I think you put a Rise at first base, put Jazz at second, and then who Who's their Miguel Rojas? Is that their shortstop right now?
No, Dodger now.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Dodgers got him. Yeah.
That's another. Wendell, so, yeah, shortstop. I guess they kind of have to put Jazz. Just Joey, yeah. Wendell at shortstop's just ridiculous. That's.
Yeah, I don't know why they don't play like John Birdie at shortstop. Like, that doesn't make too much sense for me. I like, they're both utilities, but Birdie's way more athletic. They don't have any shortstop prospects, I don't believe, either coming up. I know they have, I mean, pitching wise, it makes a lot of sense now because I looked over their, like, their pitching prospects. I mean, Yuri Perez is going to be coming up too. And then they also have Max Meyer. Yeah, they don't. So I mean, really they have Khalil Watson, but that whole Khalil Watson thing was weird, and he's not a he's a 2024 ETA, and then he literally just like left baseball this past year.
Yeah, I forgot all about him.
Oh, they have Groshans as well. I guess Groshans could play some short this year. He's a 2023 ETA.
Yeah, I mean,
but yeah, pitching wise, they got Yuri, Max Meyer, and Sixto.
I'd say they won the trade then, to be honest.
All projected. I mean, Sixto's already pitched in the league. I mean, Groshans has already been up, so hopefully he molds into the everyday shortstop. Yuri's an ETA 2023. Meyer pitched this past year as well. If I remember correctly, he actually did pretty decently. They have some great pitching prospects. It's
definitely makes
it's
sense
full of
now.
Pitching prospects. But yeah, shortstop wise, like, they have a 2025 ETA. Khalil Watson, he had a weird situation this past year, but he's also a 2024 ETA. So I guess if Groshan pans out, then, you know, he could be their shortstop / third baseman every day. But yeah, the Khalil, did you hear about the Khalil Watson thing?
No, I was just going to say, what even is that?
He basically, like, he was having a pretty good year and then, like, started struggling. And then he made a gesture at the umpire, where he pretended to shoot him.
Oh,
like during a game. It was either the umpire or the coach. I can't remember which one it was. And then he took like a leave of absence, and I don't know if he came back after that.
So the dude's probably insane.
Very weird situation that happened with that. I mean, he's a 19-year-old kid too. Very odd. Very odd. Because he was having a really good year, and then I think he started struggling a bit. And then he just started having issues. I'm trying to find what exactly happened. So he
19-year-old kid.
He grabbed headlines this summer by seemingly threatening to shoot an umpire for a called strikeout against him. He pointed the bat at him as if it was a gun. Like, what?
Yeah.
You can't.
What's this
do that.
In? What is this? Double A? Like, what's this even?
Probably
doesn't say, but still.
There is a video. I haven't seen this video before.
Go ahead and watch the video quick. Get your initial reaction from that.
That blows my okay. mind. Yeah, you just you can't
did,
do that.
Definitely. No.
Yeah, so they kicked him off the team for a while. Like, they suspended him. I don't know if he came back after or not, but yeah, weird situation there. So he's not going to be up for a while.
I completely forgot all about him, and I'm usually on with prospects.
Yeah, I mean, he was having such a good season too, and then he did that, got suspended, and I don't know. I don't know what's up with him.
All right. Well, we are we're running out of time, so we'll end off there on Watson with his little leave of absence. But hope you guys did enjoy watching this episode. We always love talking baseball. We should actually be having a guest next week. I talked a little with Ben and AJ about that, but that'll be pretty fun. Won't say who, but yeah, thank you guys for watching. Be sure to check us out on all social media platforms, you know, all our social media content everywhere, YouTube, Twitter, everywhere. So go follow Clutch Points and everything. Thank you guys for watching. I'm Drew. That's Ben. And yeah, see you guys next time. Peace out.
See ya.